Part 2, Chapter 4, Carol. Carol is walking through a train station on her way to work. She passes underneath the information board that informs passengers about arrival times and trains that are late due to leaves or a body on the tracks. Some people think that it is very selfish to choose to die by throwing yourself in front of a train, but not Carol. Carol understands why someone might choose such a horrible way to die. Carol knows what it feels like to appear normal to the people around you, but inside be only one jump away from total peace. These days, however, Carol feels very much alive and able to enjoy her life. These days, Carol is happy to act like everyone else in the city. She dresses in smart suits, pulls her hair into a tight bun, and wears small, no-nonsense jewellery. She works at an investment bank and spends her days helping wealthy people make more money. At night, she reads books about investments in Africa and Asia and news stories that affect the world's money. For Carol, if it is not about her work, then it is not worth reading. When she falls asleep, she dreams about bad things that happen to bad little girls who don't know how to behave. Carol has an early morning meeting with a wealthy customer in Hong Kong. She hopes that, when she enters the room, he will not look at her as if he expects her to offer him coffee, tea, and biscuits. Carol is used to her customers and any new people she works with, looking past her to the person they are clearly expecting to meet. She has a way for dealing with it now. It is all about being in control. She will walk up to the customer, shake his hand firmly, show off her not-too-thick lips as she smiles innocently, and tell him her name confidently in a well-spoken voice. Sometimes, after she has achieved this control, the customer will become attracted to her. Often, the customer will try to hide his attraction, but sometimes he will not. Like the rich Nigerian man a few years ago, who invited her to lunch at a hotel and tried to get her to sleep with him in one of the rooms. She was angry, but she did not want to ruin their professional relationship, so she politely told him that she was engaged to Freddy Marchmont. It makes her angry when people treat her like this, but it does not surprise her anymore. She has had to act like it is not an insult when the people she works with have complimented her for being well-spoken. Then, there was that one time when she went on a business trip to a country with a terrible record on human rights. At the border, she told them that she was visiting the country to meet people from their national bank, but they did not care. They still invaded her body to check that she had not tried to bring anything bad into their country. Their hands invaded her most private areas and brought back memories she had tried hard to forget. When Carol was 13 and a half years old, she had gone to her first party without any adults. It was at her friend Letitia's home, whose mum had gone on a special training weekend for work, and whose older sister, Jayla, had gone to stay at her boyfriend's house. Letitia had texted Carol and the rest of their friends to bring a bottle and some boys. But only those with good bodies or you won't be allowed in, you gets? Carol lied to her mother, Bumi, and told her she was going to have a sleepover and not that she would be going to a party filled with teenagers drinking and dancing all night. There, Carol drank alcohol for the first time in her life. She was drinking vodka and lime when Trey, an older boy who was at university, walked into the room with his friends. Carol liked the look of them. They were real men, and much better than the boys at Carol's school, who were still pulling girls' hair in the playground and running away laughing. Carol started dancing in front of them, glad that Letitia had told her to dress up in tight shorts and high shoes and put makeup on. She moved her thighs like the girls in the music videos and noticed that Trey was staring at her. He had never noticed her before when they passed each other on the street. No one had ever looked at her the way Trey was looking at her. Encouraged by the vodka she had been drinking, Carol started dancing in circles in the middle of the room. She danced until her head started to hurt, and she almost fell to the floor, only to be rescued by Trey. "I'll look after you," he said as he helped her up. "Lady, you're so hot, you should be arrested." He put his arms around her and pulled her close. Carol had not been hugged by anyone since she was 10 and began escaping her mother's too tight hugs. Trey's chest was hard, but when she looked up at him, his eyes were soft as he stared at her. Love. Was this love? Even though they had just met, and she still felt a bit sick from the alcohol and dancing. Oh my God, Carol thought. Was Trey going to be her future husband? "Come on," said Trey as he led her out of the room and down the hall. "You need some fresh air. You're so fine, I've got to protect you." Letitia was going to be so jealous. Once they got outside, Trey pulled her tighter under his arm and led her towards a park. Carol wondered about what was going to happen. Were they going to stop and kiss? It would be her first kiss. Not with tongues, of course, because that was disgusting. But a soft, gentle kiss on the lips, like in the old black and white films Mum liked to watch. She tried to look up at Trey, but he held her so tightly she could not move her head. Trey took her over the little bridge in the park and through a gate that could not be locked, and then she heard other voices. She and Trey were not alone. She tried to look up again, but he was too strong. Carol realized that they were not walking together anymore. She was being marched. Then suddenly, she was flat on her back on the ground, with something wrapped around her eyes, and her arms were held in place above her head. And her clothes, how had her clothes come off? And then her body was no longer her own. It belonged to them. It belonged to the hands that were touching her on and in parts of her body that were so private she had not even felt them herself yet. It hurt, too, and did not seem to end. Then they were gone, and so was she. Carol never told anyone that she had been gang-raped that night. Not even Mama, who would be angry at her for lying, or Letitia and the rest of their friends, because everyone said it was Cheryl's fault for wearing revealing clothes when the same thing happened to her in the same park in year 8. Was it Carol's fault, too? Carol suspected that it was. She shut herself in her bedroom and stopped going to school, because what was the point in learning when something like this had happened to her? What was the point? Until one day, on the anniversary of it was like she had finally woken up from a bad dream. She had been at school, watching her friends as they sat at the back of the class, laughing and joking, and not taking anything seriously. She saw their futures and hers, and knew they were not heading towards anything good. "Not me," she told herself. "Not me, not me, not me." She was not going to be like the rest of them. They were going to be poor single mothers, living in old, smelly flats, working horrible jobs just to try and earn a little bit of money. But not Carol. She was going to succeed. She decided that she was going to prove that the teachers who had given up on her were wrong, especially Mrs. Shirley King. Mrs. King, who once thought that Carol was one of the brightest kids we've ever had, but was also pure evil and would make students stay behind after school for getting to class just 5 minutes late. But who else could Carol ask now that she knew she wanted to do better in school? So she approached Mrs. King and asked her for advice about which subjects she needed to study to get a good job and which universities she should apply to when the time came. Surprisingly, Mrs. King agreed to help her if Carol promised to never miss school again or arrive too late and to stop being friends with people like Letitia. Carol did as Mrs. King asked, and 4 years later, she was invited to study maths at Oxford University. Mrs. King gave a speech in front of all the students on Carol's last day of school and told everyone how hard she had worked to help Carol. Carol is the first child in the history of this school to ever get accepted into such an excellent university, Mrs. King told them. Carol should have been proud, but instead, she felt like Mrs. King had robbed her of her special moment. At Oxford, Carol did not fit in. She could count the number of brown-skinned people around her on one hand, and none of them were as dark as her. She was different from the other students in other ways, too. They were rich and lived in big houses. Many were loud and confident and ate at expensive restaurants, spending their holidays in Paris, Prague, or Vilnius. Where was that, even? And living nice, happy lives. Carol, on the other hand, lived in a small flat with her single mother and had never eaten at a restaurant with waiters. She had never gone on a single holiday, either. But she had been gang-raped when she was 13 and a half years old. Carol knew she was nothing like those loud, confident students at Oxford. At the end of her first term, Carol returned to her home in Peckham and told her mother that she did not want to return to university. "I'm done, Mama. I'm done." "Eh? What kind of nonsense is this?" Bumi shouted. "Listen to me, Carol Williams. Did me and Papa come to this country for a better life, only to see our daughter give up so easily? Stop thinking that everyone hates you. Did you ask them? Did you say to them, 'Excuse me, do you hate me?' Go back to university and find the people who want to be your friends, even if they are all white people. There is someone for everyone in this world." So Carol went back to university and did her best to fit in. She made friends and even got herself a boyfriend. Marcus was a white Kenyan who liked to date black girls. Carol did not care, but she knew she could never tell her mother about him. Bumi had told Carol many times that she had to marry a Nigerian man. Carol watched Marcus and her new friends closely and copied how they spoke, what they ate, and where they shopped. They introduced her to food like sushi and guacamole, pronounced guacamole, and invited her to their large family homes to spend the weekend, where they went for long walks just for fun. Carol tried to copy how they looked, too. She stopped wearing a lot of makeup, took off her false nails, and even straightened her curly hair. Marcus told her that he liked her natural hair, but Carol knew that her curls would stop her from getting a good job. Carol is still friends with Marcus, but she is now engaged to Freddie, who is also white. Freddie, who she met at a party a couple of years after she started working. Freddie comes from a rich family, the kind of family that got him a job straight out of university just by making one phone call. Freddie does not want to work hard for the rest of his life. He would rather stay at home and keep their house organized while Carol goes to work. Carol loves that about Freddie. She knows that she will go further, faster in her job with him at her side. Once, Freddie told her that his parents wanted him to marry someone like them, someone whose family went back to William the Conqueror.
"You should have seen their faces when I told them I was marrying you," said Freddie with a laugh.